The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'm delighted to welcome back to the program today Winifred Gallagher. She joins us by telephone. Now, where are you, Wyoming?
No, right now I'm actually in upstate New York, on my way to Wyoming next week.
All right. Well, I had to have you back on because last year we had you on for the hardcover release of your book, How the Post Office Created America. And I think this is such an important book that I had to have you come back for the paperback, which just came out.
I'm delighted that you invited me again.
You think the post office is important. You wrote this book. Why is the post office so important?
I think that the post office created America in four very distinctive ways. Politically, the founders ensured that we would be a country that was united by information and communications. Way back in 1792, they passed the Post Office Act that more or less said that in order to have an informed electorate, the people needed to know what was going on. They needed the news. So our postal network prioritized the delivery of the news and information about public affairs to the people rather than letters. So that is really what sparked our lively, uncensored, very contentious political culture that we can see around us today. It goes right back to 1792. So that was extremely important. Once you decide that you're going to get the news and information about what the government is up to the people, you have to figure out how you're going to do that. So the post office also helped create America physically, by transforming what was kind of a wilderness into a social landscape made up of post roads and villages centered on post offices that were Americans' first addresses. So now you had the beginnings of a transportation grid that was entirely subsidized by the post office, not entirely, but subsidized by the post office. The post office paid stagecoaches, railroads, steamboats, and airplanes to carry the mail, a very important public-private collaboration. So, we have political, we have physical. Socially, the post office were Americans' first community centers, and they still are in much of rural America. They're places where people gather to share the news, read each other's mail, share their newspapers. Very important community institutions. And similarly, the post office helped create the American economy by really enabling the national market, the shift from the agrarian economy to the industrial economy. The post was the only way that merchants and businessmen could communicate with each other and with their customers. So it's really like it's really part of the postal communications are part of the America's DNA.
Winifred Gallagher joins us for book How the Post Office Created America, just out in paperback. I think one of our great flaws as a nation is that we seem to suffer from institutional amnesia. We don't really have a long recall for our institutions and what they've been through. And if we look at the current state of the Postal Service, we think, oh, they're in crisis, but we've had many crises over the years with the Postal Service. We've dealt with them. We have a Postal Service that was essentially created as a different entity in 1970 under Richard Nixon. But your book takes us back and shows us how this was really a radical experiment in democracy. Explain.
Very much so. European countries like England and France had postal systems, but they were one of the reasons they had them was they were very powerful espionage tools. Both of those countries had people who opened the mail, looking for treason and looking for private information that they used so that the governments could wield it against their various enemies. When Benjamin Franklin and Thomas Jefferson were serving as diplomats in Europe, their mail was opened by those other governments. So it was a very radical idea that we were going to not only share information with everybody in the country, as opposed to keeping it away from people the way they did in Europe. We also, from the very beginning, had a concept of the inviolability of the mail, because the first Patriots, their mail had been opened when Britain was running the colonial postal service here. They were adamant that our mail would be sacrosanct, and it still is today.
And if we look back at a couple of hundred years ago and those early origins of our U.S. mail, the mail was very expensive, and to send a private first-class letter is very expensive. Only people with a lot of money could afford to do it. Back in, say, 1820, the average American got one letter a year. It was very expensive. And one of the visionary things that they did back in those early days, European travelers would come over here and be astounded at how informed the average American citizen out in some little town would be. And that's because they gave very special rates to send newspapers. And this caused a flourishing in newspapers. And Americans were very well informed because they could very cheaply receive newspapers in the mail.
Exactly. It was a kind of Robin Hood scheme where the letters, which were, as you point out, very expensive to send and were mostly only sent by businessmen and lawyers and people like that, the high cost of letter postage subsidized the cheap circulation of newspapers. So you could get a nice big fat newspaper for a penny, but a letter might be the equivalent of like a couple dollars. But this, actually, you alluded to this a little earlier, this caused what was the biggest crisis in postal history, which is not now or was not the 1960s, but back in the 1840s, people got fed up with the high cost of letter mail. Americans wanted their newspapers, but they also wanted to have cheap postage. They wanted to be able to communicate with each other, especially now as America was expanding very rapidly into the West. So if you were going to leave your relatives in Massachusetts and move to Nebraska, you wanted to have a way to communicate with them that didn't cost like an arm and a leg. So this really, people became so annoyed with the high cost of post that private carriers sprang up offering independent postal services. These guys would hire individual carriers who would ride trains with carpet bags full of letters, say, from New York to Boston, and would do it very inexpensively, say, for a nickel, as opposed to, like, the high postal rates. So this became such a problem that Congress realized that they had to do something about it. And they did, in the 1840s, there were many, many postal reforms, the most important and popular of which were America's first stamps, prepaid adhesive stamps, bearing the images of George Washington and Benjamin Franklin that were available, depending on distance, for 5 cents or 10 cents. They were wildly popular, and the rates were very soon lowered to 3 cents for any distance. It really changed Americans' daily lives. People started, it was very similar to our email. People started sending letters just, you know, do you want to come over for dinner tonight? And if they lived near good railroad transportation, they would get a reply saying, yes, I'll come for dinner on the same day. It was remarkably good mail service.
That's amazing to think that you just drop your letter, just like an email, really, because you don't read your email right away. You could come home and look at it 6 hours later and say, oh, they want to come over for dinner. It was very comparable.
The whole railway mail is really a fascinating part of American history that never gets discussed. For a long time, for a good 50 years, let's say 90% of America's intercity mail wasn't just transported on trains, it was sorted on trains. They actually had these little miniature post office cars, rail cars, that were railway mail cars. So if you dropped a letter in the mail in New York, it it wasn't just carried from one place to another. It was actually sorted and changed to another train to get it there more expeditiously. It was an amazing system. Very, very rapid mail delivery.
Incredibly efficient. And, of course, those railroad clerks were highly compensated compared to other postal workers. My guest is Winifred Gallagher. Her book is How the Post Office Created America. And we learn in this book the impacts, major impacts of three great wars upon the Postal Service. And the first one in the Civil War was a fairly positive impact in a way. And then the First World War and the Second World War were not so good. But in the Civil War, we had a situation where suddenly the country is split in half and you can't really send mail from the north to the south unless you're smuggling it. And yet during the Civil War, we had a visionary postmaster who was able to push through some very important things. And one of them was a result of the war because people were getting bad news and there was no such thing as home delivery. And this postmaster, I think it was Montgomery Blair, started what you call free city delivery. Now we just take it for granted, unless we live in a little tiny town that only has post office boxes. But they wanted to send bad news discreetly.
That's right. A postal worker in Ohio thought it was just he found it so heartbreaking to have to hand somebody a letter that said your son died or your husband died, that he volunteered to start a pilot program to bring the mail to people. And Montgomery Blair, during the Civil War, serving Lincoln, heard about this and brought this fellow to Washington and took the system wide. So that's when you really got the spread of free city delivery. Of course, rural people didn't get that until rural free delivery, you know, around the turn of the century, which was an enormous advance for country people too. But while we're talking about it, I also add that that was another big advance that Blair brought about was postal money orders. Up until that point, it was really to allow the Union soldiers to send their salaries back home safely, because up until that point you had to like shove some cash in an envelope and hope that it got there. Mm. So the money order system was another big thing that came out of the Civil War, and of course soon after it wasn't restricted to military officers. Everybody wanted to do it. It was a big business, postal money orders.
And this has not ended, because I go in the post office frequently and I often see citizens who perhaps don't have a bank account purchasing money orders so they can take care of their bills and take care of their business. And this is still a very important part of the Postal Service.
You bet, and it could be much more a part of a great service to the community, and also a profitable financial thing for the post office to be able to bring back postal savings banking, which we had in the first part of the 20th century. I think maybe even into 1960s, as I recall, was very big during the Depression. There are a lot of Americans who the commercial banks don't want to serve them because they feel that these little they're not interested in these small-time customers. They don't have enough money. So like between 20% and 30% of Americans are shut out of, redlined out of the official banking system. Postal savings banking could do an enormous amount of good for them. But here again, and in terms of sending money and materials and stuff overseas, there are a lot of people who don't want the post office to be competing with private companies that do that, you know, the check cashing services and all that kind of thing. So, again, it's one of the great themes of the post office and of American history is actually the pendulum swing between government is good, business is bad, versus business is bad, government is good. I mean, it goes back and forth, and we're now living in a very pro-business age.
I don't think it will be privatized. The people who want to privatize it, it makes for very good letters to the editor and newspapers and stuff, but it's not a widely popular idea. And the competitors, so-called competitors of the Post, these days are really frenemies. UPS mm-hmm. and FedEx depend on the post office to do a lot of their so-called last mile deliveries for them. The post office flies mail on FedEx planes. It's really, people who want to privatize don't really understand the way the national delivery system actually works. So I don't think that's going to happen. The second possibility is that the post office could be retrofitted for the digital age. There were people back in the 1980s who wanted the post office to go digital, who said that email was the logical extension of paper mail, that the post office could be supplying all these things to us the same way they gave us a physical address, they would give us a digital address. And because of the crises in the 60s and the trauma of the post office in a state of near collapse, management was just too timid to pursue this bold step, and ditto for Congress. There were people who spoke up for it, but their voices were drowned out, which was very unfortunate.
Mm.
So I think what's likeliest to happen is the third solution, where the services will be pared back to profitable ones. And the star of that show is parcel delivery. Because of e-commerce, it's interesting. Postal executives like to say the internet giveth and it taketh away.
Mm-hmm.
The same way that the internet really almost decimated a lot of first-class mail, it's been an incredible boom to parcel delivery. So that the revenue the post office receives now for delivering your internet purchases rose by 50% just between 2010 and 2015. Which is a phenomenal increase, that, and it actually more than compensates for the loss to the first class mail. So I think that's the likeliest thing to happen. The post office will be pared back to things that clearly support themselves, and then perhaps later down the road, some new possibilities will arise.
Winifred Gallagher joins us. Her book is How the Post Office Created America, just out in paperback. And we come into a period where we talked about how they subsidized newspapers and made them very inexpensive to ship, but the first-class letters were still expensive. And then we get into really the golden age of letter writing. They lowered the price of a first-class stamp to 3 cents, and this had a tremendous impact on letter writing, and particularly for women. Tell us about the Victorian laptop.
Yeah, it was actually a little portable desk that you could put it on your lap or on a table. They were very handsome. Wealthy ladies had very fancy ones, and it contained your stationery, your stamps, your pens, your wax to seal the letter, all kinds of devices like that. And women, because railroads were really taking off, women were traveling. And they took these little portable writing desks, desktops, in the true sense of the word, wherever they went. Women were so interested in, as soon as mail became cheap to send a letter, women could afford to use the post. Until then, it had been mostly businessmen who used letter mail. So they actually, a popular fashion accessory was wear a little locket around your neck on a chain, and inside the locket were your stamps.
Oh.
So that's how precious they were. Women became big postal customers, and this caused a big fuss in the postal establishment, because previously the big urban post offices had been male public spaces, and now women were going to the post office, and that was considered quite scandalous. Some post offices actually had separate sex-segregated windows where women had to pick up their mail at a separate window.
Well, on that same note, one of the points of opposition against home delivery was that this newspaper or this carrier might show up to deliver the mail, and a woman might be home alone.
Yes. And unbelievably, for a long time, people were not obliged, even in cities, they were not obliged to have mailboxes or mail slots. This meant that your postal carrier had to hand the letter to you. If you weren't home, he had to come back five times until you were home. It's kind of amazing how long it took so that the carrier was allowed just to drop the letter at your residence, whether you were a woman home alone or not.
This golden age of letter writing also saw a huge burst in greeting card business and Valentine's. The whole industry grew up.
Absolutely. It became a confluence of two things. You had the cheap postage, so it became affordable to send greeting cards to people. At the same time that the printing industry was rapidly improving, the printing processes were getting much better. Cheap paper was being produced, better, brighter dyes, so you could have more color. And the whole thing came together with the Valentine's Day, Christmas cards, Hanukkah cards, Jewish New Year cards. There was a business opportunity there, and the greeting card industry jumped right in. And, you know, the post office made it all possible with those 3-cent stamps.
Well, there practically wasn't a greeting card industry before they got those lower prices. And we can look at all these other industries that grew up because of the post office. I think one really good example is aviation. We had all these airplanes flying for 20, 30 years, but they really didn't have a purpose except perhaps in war. During World War I, they didn't really have anything to do. And then the Postal Service started using them to deliver mail, and they really kept these planes going, didn't they?
They kept the whole industry alive. Airplanes were novelties. Like, people went to the county fair, and like a barnstormer, like a guy in a little flimsy little linen and wooden plane would fly around, and everyone would go, "Ooh, look at that!" But there was no practical purpose to it. There was no. They were tiny. They were slow. They were unsafe. There were no airports. There were no landing strips. There was no lighting. There was no technology. They were just, you know, these things that were kind of cool to watch somebody fly around. They were used a little bit in World War I. And then right after that, the post office in 1918 bought a bunch of those little flying jennies that were used in World War I and said, let's experiment with sending the mail, because the postmasters general have always been about speeding up mail service. So they bought some of these planes and started flying the mail, and basically developed the whole system, subsidized that whole system of airports and landing strips and radio control towers, and it was all the post office behind it, and supported those aviation companies, allowed them to keep manufacturing planes because they couldn't support themselves with passenger service and even begin to think of that until like well into the 1940s. So it's really the post office really was the mother and father of the aviation industry.
That is an amazing part of the story of how the post office created America. And do you need to go outside? I think I just heard your mail carrier honk the horn. Maybe they have a package. Winifred Gallagher joins us. Okay, I mentioned earlier about how the Civil War brought some good things, some innovations to the post office. Tell us how World War I and World War II were somewhat detrimental to the post office.
Yeah, the big crisis, when people talk about the postal crisis of the 1960s, when a number of big urban post offices, principally Chicago, just basically had to shut down for a couple weeks because they were just inundated with mail that they couldn't process. That crisis really started back in the two World Wars and the Great Depression. All of a sudden, there were these crises that had to be dealt with, and they got the money from the federal government, who starved the post office in order to give to the Defense Department, for example. So the big post offices were falling apart. Their technology was way behind. The post office had always been cutting-edge technology. Now there was no investment in new technology. So people were using tools that would have been familiar to Benjamin Franklin at a time that the mail volume at the same time was doubling. So the post offices by the 60s had been kind of starved and depleted by these other national crises, and they were being asked to do double the work with much less, you know, really inferior equipment and conditions. so that's really what caused the crisis of the 60s.
And the current crisis, in many ways, we can attribute it to something that Congress did in 2006 called the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act. I think a lot of our listeners have probably heard about this in some way.
Yeah, people think that the post office is in trouble because of email, but really the core of the crisis, the acute crisis, was the bill that you just talked about in 2006, which ordered the post office, unlike any other private or public institution, to pre-fund its retiree health care benefits to the tune of $5 billion a year for 10 years. So here's this struggling agency that is, a nonprofit, gets no tax dollars, paying for itself, actually in the black. Now all of a sudden they have to take $5 billion and hand it over to the U.S. Treasury every year for 10 years. So that just, that became impossible. And that's really the core of the big postal crisis.
Winifred Gallagher.
There again, it was imposed on them by Congress.
Right. And lobbyists are a big part also of the Postal Service's impediments.
Sure. They pay for political campaigns. So certainly the junk mailers don't want Congress to reform the post office. They want to continue to get their incredibly cheap rates for sending their junk mail. The big postal unions don't want the post office to reform. They want to keep all the hours and positions they have now. So, Congress has been in a state of inertia. Everybody's known that the Enforcement Act of 2006 was a disaster. Everybody acknowledges that. Why has nothing been done about it for the last 11 years? Because they're lobbied. They don't want to make changes that are going to upset some of the people who profit from the status quo.
Winifred Gallagher has joined us, and the first time we had you on the show was for your book, Wrapped, Attention and the Focus Life. You came out to Yellow Springs to see us, and then we had you on last year for the hardcover release of this book, How the Post Office Created America. At that time, we had President Obama. Now we have a new president, and regardless of what happens to the presidency of Donald Trump, when he's out of office, he will have the franking privilege, won't he?
Yes, he will. Although I have read that he prefers to write letters in longhand and have personal couriers carry the letters to the recipient.
Really?
So, yes, he'll have the franking privilege.
I didn't know that. Well, I imagine he'll want to take advantage of the franking privilege, which will give him free mail.
Yeah, and postmasters also have the franking privilege. It was certainly a big deal back in the day that people had to do all their business and correspondence by post. It was a big perk of the job.
Well, Winifred, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program.
It's been my great pleasure to be with you.
My guest has been Winifred Gallagher. The book is How the Post Office Created America. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.